So I think we should try to get on the same page with some technical terms before I start this sermon. In a second, we're going to talk about the context. But I wanted to share with you something I've learned. You might want to take notes. It's pretty intense. So the term we're going to need to look at today is hot potato. All right, so it's a noun, informal. And definition of that would be a problem that is so controversial or sensitive that those handling it risk unpleasant consequences. The example there is gun control is a political hot potato. On a lighter note, has anybody ever played hot potato, the game? Yeah. Sort of like throw a water balloon or something like that, and then it explodes and all that kind of stuff. All right, so what we've got going on here is a little bit of hot potato. It's going to help to frame the context. We're going to look at sort of the whole chapter of John 18. So our passage begins kind of abruptly. This is one scene. This verse 33 to 37 is one scene in this larger play of John 18. And so the context is kind of critical to figure out where we are and how we got there. So first what happens is Jesus is praying with his disciples, and you all know the story. All of the Jewish leaders show up with some of the police. Judas betrays Jesus with a kiss, and Jesus is taken into custody. So basically what's going on is Jesus has been shaking things up within the Jewish community, and this is the moment. This is where they're done. They've had enough of it. They're sick of dealing with Jesus. They're sick of hearing about Jesus, and it's time to end this. And so this is the first in their fell swoop, and we know how the story ends. But so Jesus is taken, and first he's taken to Annas, who is one of the Jewish leaders. So he's taken to Annas. And they kind of go back and forth a little bit, but Jesus is kind of bound and captured there before Annas. So Jesus is theoretically the one here being prosecuted by Annas. But Jesus, bound and captured, says, "If I said something wrong, testify as to what is wrong." So Jesus is before Annas, and he basically says, "Why have you dragged me in here? What's the problem?" And we don't hear Annas' answer, because he doesn't have one. So suddenly the prosecutor becomes the prosecuted. Annas is like, all right, I don't know what to do with this guy. I can't charge him. And he kind of sends him along up the chain to the next authority within the Jewish community, which would be the high priest Caiaphas himself. And we've actually got to look to one of the other gospels to see what goes on there. So in the book of Matthew, this is in Matthew 26, the high priest, who's considered the ultimate sort of human religious authority for these people. So you don't really get higher than Caiaphas. And Caiaphas didn't get to his position on the basis of his good looks. So he's a smart guy. He knows the law. He's good with people, at least good enough to obtain the highest position within the Jewish community. He knows his scriptures deeply. Guaranteed the guy could quote most of the Old Testament. So Jesus is brought before this guy, and I'll read you what happens as they're trying to charge Jesus with a crime worthy of death. It's Matthew 26, 59 to 60. So it's the chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin. So not just Caiaphas, this one guy, is there, but the whole of the Jewish authority is there. These are all the big players, all the big names within the religious community. So the chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for false evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death. So the Bible tells us that these people are literally just sort of scrabbling for anything they can find to convict Jesus with. They're even kind of nudging each other, hey, why don't you go take the stand and just make something up? If you make something up, we'll buy it and we'll get to convict Jesus. And the pastor continues, but they did not find any, though many false witnesses came forward. So here Jesus has been captured, he's bound, he's taken before Annas. Doesn't work out very well, gets sent to Caiaphas the high priest with the whole of the Sanhedrin. Doesn't really work out, even though they're searching even for false witnesses, they can't find any. So they're kind of stumped and frustrated, I would imagine, because they really want Jesus out of the picture. And so they take Jesus to the Roman government. So when I think of the Roman government, the first image that pops into my mind is the Colosseum. Really cool thing to see, but we don't see the violence that once occurred there. So Rome was was the ruler of the known world, and there's a reason for that. They were good at killing people and keeping people in line. Rome was highly ordered, but also highly violent, a brutal place. And the Jewish community is bringing Jesus before them, I think, hoping these guys are brutal. They'll take care of this for us. This is perfect. So they go to Pilate, going to Pilate's door. I sort of imagine them knocking on Pilate's door fairly early in the morning. We know from another place, Peter standing around a fire. We know it's very cold that morning. Kind of imagine them pounding on Pilate's door, being like, all right, governor, governor, Pilate's the governor. You need to wake up. We've got this criminal. And Pilate sort of stumbles to the door in his white and gold chariot pajamas, you know. Always on call if you're the governor. And they have this conversation outside. The Jews won't enter into Pilate's house. They won't enter in the palace because it's sort of Passover time. And if they do that, they're unclean and can't have Passover. So normally where Pilate would kind of sit on his seat, on his ruling seat, maybe stand at his ruling lectern, he's actually made to come out to talk to the Jews. So he's probably a little annoyed about this. And they go back and forth. Pilate asks them, what has this guy done? And they, instead of telling Pilate what he's done, because he hasn't done anything, they say, well, would we have brought you Jesus if he hadn't done anything? Come on, Pilate, like, you think we're silly? And so you can see what's going on here. It's a bunch of kind of made up garbage. But Pilate finally kind of acquiesces. I would guess that as the Jews are kind of standing around, someone sort of whispers, he's a traitor, rebel. He's a rebel. He's going to overthrow the Roman government. Knowing that when you're before Rome, if you talk about kingship that is not Roman kingship, that's the end for you. So in Rome, you could do just about anything you wanted except claim kingship, except try to overthrow Roman rule. And so I kind of imagine that they've said that, and Pilate's finally like, all right, they used the T word, you know, treason. So I'm going to have to see this guy. So Pilate probably goes inside, takes off his pajamas, gets dressed in his robe with his grape leaves and all of that. And then we've basically got Pilate re-entering the Praetorium, and that's where we pick up in this passage. So they've probably seated Jesus or stood Jesus, and Pilate comes in, and you can see why I think Pilate was probably annoyed at this point. There's no formality. There's just Pilate cuts straight to the chase. Pilate basically says, are you the king? Are you trying to overthrow the Roman government? Is there a reason for you to be in here before me, or can I get rid of you and go back to bed or whatever else he was doing? So 33, Pilate enters the Praetorium and asks, are you the king of the Jews? And what's going on here is there's this question of identity. So what Jesus says, what Jesus asserts about his identity next will sort of determine the course of events. If Jesus were to say, yes, I'm the king of the Jews, Pilate would have every urgent right under Roman rule to execute Jesus. Wouldn't need much due process to do it. If Jesus called himself the king of the Jews, that's it. If Jesus were to say no, Pilate could do what he wanted to do and just let Jesus go into the hands of the Jews to do whatever it is they saw fit. So this is a question of identity. And it's a question of identity wrapped up in action. So if Jesus claims a certain identity, that determines his actions. And so I want to illustrate the idea of identity for you with a story. If you're a high schooler, you may have heard part of this story before. In the summer of 2011, I was working as a whitewater rafting guide in Montana. And I got called into a meeting with my boss and the other guides. Rumor had it for a few days that a pop star was coming to town, and that we were going to be the ones to sort of serve this pop star as guides. We'd sort of talked about who it would be, and we get into this meeting, and my boss revealed that it was Kesha coming to town. I realize I'm going to have to put this in some context. So Kesha would be like Britney Spears, Madonna, Marilyn Monroe, James Dean. Are we getting the picture? Kind of like edgy, dangerous, pop star, extremely famous, very wealthy, known for a party lifestyle. So like every good 20-something searching for truth, we got on Google and attempted to ascertain every bit of information we could about Kesha. You know, who she was, what she was about. So we looked up every interview, and every manuscript and every song lyric, and we must have watched 24 music videos. And basically, we decided from looking at all of his truth pulled from the almighty Google that that we knew who Kesha was. We were ready for her. We knew who she was, so we knew what she was going to be about. And she was going to be about partying, drugs, alcohol, sex, anything party style that she could get her hands on. That's what she was going to do. That's who she was going to be. And in our minds, that was the totality of this pop star, Kesha. That's it. And so she showed up, and over the course of several days that myself and guides got to spend with her, I was not surprised, to be honest. There was a lot of partying. There was a lot of drugs. There was a lot of alcohol. There was a lot of madness going on. And I was, you know, not surprised. This was fine. This is what I was expecting. This is what I was prepared for. But what I wasn't prepared for was the last day that they were in town. I got assigned, the lucky one, to take Kesha and her entourage, 8 people, on a bus into Yellowstone National Park by myself. And to give you an idea of how these people are, imagine trying to herd ferrets in an airport. It's like a disaster. And here we are in the wilds of Yellowstone. And so we're kind of driving along, and they're super rowdy in the back. And somebody yells up, "Kesha wants to go rock climbing." Like, oh my gosh, all right, it's starting to get dark. And I know there are some boulders called the Hoodoos in the park. I figure boulders, not that tall. They probably won't get themselves into trouble. Oh, this will be great. Like, they'll kind of wander around. I can wander with them, show them an easy thing to climb up. So we pull up to the Hoodoos, and I park the bus. It's got one of those big bus door things. And so I opened the door, and as the handle clicked in, 8 people shotgunned into the Hoodoos. There's like 5 square miles of Hoodoos in this park. And they were just gone out the door. And it's not dusk yet, but it's heading that direction. I panicked a little bit. My phone wasn't working, because you don't get signal if you're up in Yellowstone. And here are these pop stars, one worth millions and millions of dollars, in the Hoodoos. So I decided I would do the most sensible thing, and I ran at top speed around the boulders trying to find anybody, mostly Kesha. If somebody got hurt, not good. If Kesha got hurt, very not good. So I went chasing after them. And I rounded this boulder and kind of ran smack into Kesha. She's looking at me like, "Dude, what's your problem?" Like, I'm panting, I'm sweating at this point, you know, kind of looking for him. It's been a few minutes, and kind of ran into her, and she's totally fine, just kind of like hanging around, wandering around. I'm like, okay, I've got Kesha, so everybody else should be okay. Yeah, this is fine. And so we kind of wandered around for a few minutes. I was sort of trying to steer us back towards the van, hoping that everyone else would show up, and found this boulder, and she said she wanted to climb it. I'm like, oh, all right, this is fine. It's kind of a big slab of rock. And so for the next few minutes, we kind of climbed up this slab of rock and just sat there chatting. And this conversation totally blew up my perspective on this person, as I realized that this individual I thought I knew from Google was more than that. So here's this person who's living the peak, the pinnacle of what America would call the dream. So she's rich. She has worshipers. I wouldn't say followers. I would say worshipers. She's got, you know, as much money as she wants. She's got an agent who will run out and grab her fast food anytime she wants. Sounds like heaven to me. And she's got a cool tour bus, and she goes on tour and on all this stuff, and everybody loves her. And here's this girl who's lonely by her own admission, lost by her own admission. And the one that hit me the hardest was, here's a person who feels trapped by the situation that she created. So this pop star revealed to me, without really any prodding, that she felt trapped. She felt like if she wanted to leave that lifestyle, she would let down her entourage, her fans, and even her family, who at this point was starting to depend on all of the money that she was making. And I didn't really know what to do with that. I tend to see things in binary, so either Kesha's a wild party animal or she's a real human being, and there's no overlap there. And it turns out there is overlap there. And I think that as I've started reflecting on that, I've started to realize that truth is a very, very muddy thing for us. So all this stuff I learned from Google was mostly true, okay? But there was more to that, okay? And that was problematic for me, for sure. I didn't really know how to reconcile all of that and how to fit those pieces together very well. And what it took for me to realize that there was more than Google was this actual one-to-one personal conversation with Kesha through no filter. So there was no tabloid reporting this to me. It wasn't her entourage telling me about her. It was her talking to me about her. And I'd like to sort of suggest, it's a little dangerous to draw a parallel between a pop star and Jesus, but that's sort of the parallel I want to draw here. And I think the crux of this passage, the sort of the peak for me as I've been thinking about it, is the question that's in here. And that question would be the way Jesus responds to Pilate's question. So I'll repeat it. Pilate enters the praetorium and says to Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus says back, "Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me?" And I think more times than not, we become Pilate in this situation, assuming something, asking something of Jesus, without actually having had a conversation with Jesus about who he is. We depend on the Christian version of the tabloids to know who Jesus is. We depend on the religious authorities of our day to know who Jesus is, rather than going direct to the source. And what continues in this passage is Jesus and Pilate kind of play back and forth. Pilate says, "I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus doesn't answer the question. Jesus says, "My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here." Pilate tries again. Pilate says, "So you are a king?" He's just looking for the answer to the question that he is asking and nothing more. And Jesus says, "You say that I am a king. You say that I am a king. For this I was born and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." And I think what we see in this passage are the start of these answers of these things we should be looking for. So we should be looking for truth. And truth comes from Christ. It says it right here. "I came into the world to testify to the truth." If we listen to Jesus, we find that truth. And Jesus talks about his kingdom, which means that in some way he's a king, but he's not a king of this realm. And so I think that what's going on in this passage is a question to us that says, who is Jesus? Who is Jesus really? Where did you get your information about Jesus? And I think the question from Christ to me and to you is, who do you say that I am? Do you say I'm a king? Well, who told you to ask me that? Or are you, from your heart, asking me that? And today's the last Sunday of the Christian year, so we're coming into the new Christian year. And as we do that, I think it's an excellent time for us to begin questioning our own knowledge of Jesus. So the birth of Christ is upcoming, and that's the start. It's where this stuff starts. And so I'd ask that you would start this year in conversation with Christ, not in conversation with something else. I think what happened when I've been reflecting on this Kesha story is that I've learned that truth is this very muddy thing, that we sometimes get good truth from places other than the person. So there are certain things about Kesha that I found to be true from my Google searches. But it wasn't all the way true. It was kind of mixed up and messed up. Talking to Kesha is how I found some of that real truth about her. And so as you go into the new year, start to question it. Let yourself be Pilate. Allow yourself to be accusing Christ of things and asking Christ things, because he can handle it. Jesus says, everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice. I think as Christians, we belong to the truth. And all we've got to do is listen to Christ's voice. We're going to begin finding that truth and figuring out what is not true that we hold to be true from other sources. All right, please pray with me. Lord Jesus, we thank you for who you are, and we thank you that that you will answer our prayers to find you and to know you. Thank you that we are able to have conversations directly with you. I ask, Jesus, that you would help us to see things that we think we know that are not true, that have come from places other than you. And I ask that you would reveal yourself to us powerfully in this new year. In your name, amen.